Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mpati in Washington. Today is Monday, November 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Ethiopians rallied Sunday in support of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's war effort.
The demonstrators expressed their support to the policy and to the government of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed. It was to send a signal to the U.S. government that Ethiopia is capable of addressing its problems and issues.
Former Liberian Vice President Joseph Boakai says he will make an effort to resolve ongoing squabbles within the opposition collaborating political parties. Eswatini's government tells South Africa's Julius Malema to keep his activism inside South Africa, and ECOWAS imposes sanctions on all members of Mali's transitional government.
The question I would like to raise to ECOWAS leadership that made this decision is, what is really the purpose of this sanction? These people who are sanctioned today, they don't have wealth, they don't have resources.
And supporters of Cameroon President Paul Biya celebrate his 39 years in power. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Ethiopians rallied Sunday in support of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's war effort against rebels of the Tigrayan People's Liberation Front, the TPLF. The rally comes as the international community urges the Ethiopian government to end the war peacefully. Last week, the U.S. government accused Ethiopia of gross violations of human rights. Dr. Brooke Hailu is an adjunct professor of political science at the University of Maryland and North Carolina A&T State University. He says the demonstrators came to send a clear message to the international community that Ethiopia can address its own problems.
From what I have gathered, the objective and goals of the demonstration was to, in a very clear way, send a signal to the U.S. government and to European governments as well, that Ethiopia is capable of addressing its problems and issues, that the Ethiopian government is there to listen to what the American government is saying. But when it comes to make some kind of a dictate or diktat, as they say in French or Latin, that it will not allow the interference in the internal affairs of Ethiopia, that the Ethiopian government says that it is being sort of pushed to talk to the rebel group, the TPLF, who were in power for 27 years and who lost power 3 years ago and who want to make a comeback to power again. And thirdly, this is a message of solidarity with the Ethiopian army.
Professor Hailu, you know that the United States government and other Western governments have accused the Ethiopian military of some gross human rights violations. And in fact, there's a threat to remove Ethiopia from the African Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA. Your comment?
Yes. Great questions. When it comes to the Ethiopian-American official relations, it goes back more than 100 years. Ethiopia being the first black African nation, independent nation, to be represented in the USC, as you know, Mr. James. What happened right now is that the government is saying that the war was started officially in November the 3rd and November the 4th, 2020. The war was started by a certain rebel group who has ruled Ethiopia brutally for the last 27 years and wanted to make a comeback. And the Ethiopian government's position is that it is its responsibility constitutionally, as well as what the Ethiopian people expect from it, is to defend the territorial integrity. So that is the issue, and that's the position. And Ethiopian government and the Ethiopian public are really unhappy and sad. They feel that the American government has taken sides because the American government is pushing the government and the rebels who took up arms and who defied the constitution to be put in equal parity. And the government is saying that that should not be the right position of the American government.
So, Professor Hailu, people say if Prime Minister Abe won the Nobel Peace Prize, how come he cannot come to the negotiation table to end the war peacefully?
That's a great question. Another great, Mr. James. Yes, Dr. Abe was recognized in his first year of office as a peacemaker within Ethiopia, which the TPLF regime was not able to accomplish. And then those group who lost power, they began to agitate and they attacked the Ethiopian federal forces in, as I said already, November 3rd and 4th, that fateful day. And hence, Abe, as the prime minister of the country, as the commander-in-chief of Ethiopia, although he is a peacemaker, he had the constitutional duty and expectation from the Ethiopian government and the Ethiopian people and the army to safeguard the territorial integrity of Ethiopia.
Professor Hailu, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you, Mr. James Bathy. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Brooke Hailu is an adjunct professor of political science at the University of Maryland and North Carolina A&T State University. You are speaking with us from North Carolina. The Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, has imposed travel bans and access-free sanctions on all members of Mali's transitional government and their family members. However, political analyst Ibrahima Kan of Senegal wants to know the purpose of such sanctions.
These people who are sanctioned today, they don't have wealth, they don't have resources, and I think they are so busy in Mali that traveling for them will be even very difficult. And even with the sanctioning, what tools ECOWAS has to really monitor the implementation of this decision, that's one thing. Second aspect is the efficiency of such decision. Mali is on the verge, and they even talked about it at large in the report, that the security situation, you know, is completely bad. So how in that particular context you can even think about preparing election, holding election, when the government doesn't control even 10 to 15% of the territory? And you acknowledge that in your report. Three, what is the purpose of organizing election in the context where all the other measures that were taken by ECOWAS last year were not implemented? So in that particular context, why taking this kind of decision against the government?
Ibrahima, in that sense, therefore, what do you think ECOWAS should have done?
That's exactly the point that I really would like to make. But for me, when you acknowledge the fact that there is no progress in the security front, there is no progress in implementing some of the decisions that ECOWAS was making, I think the wise decision would have been to really sit down with the Malian government and to really look at very closely what will be the realistic time frame now to hold election, to come back to a certain kind of normality. They are putting pressure on the government. They are putting pressure on the Malian society. Which results? And when you look at it very closely, the way they treated Mali is different from the way they treated Guinea-Conakry. And the Guineans have not even decided to put forward an agenda. And what they have said, they have decided to nominate Ibn Shambas to go and discuss with the Guineans on the best way to do. And I'm sure Shambas, as an experienced politician and also as an experienced ECOWAS person, can really come suggest discussing the people with a realistic agenda that can be put forward.
Ibrahima Kan is a Senegalese political analyst. He was speaking with us from Dakar. The former vice president of Liberia, Joseph Boakai, says he is open to resolving the ongoing squabble within the opposition collaborating political parties, the CPP, upon his return to Liberia. Mr. Boakai is currently in the United States, where he says plans are in the making to meet with some U.S. government officials. The 77-year-old Mr. Boakai, who served for 12 years as Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's vice president, is seeking the nomination of the four-party CPP, along with Alexander Cummings of the Alternative National Congress Party, also a member of the CPP. Lately, the CPP has been embroiled in a squabble over accusations by some members that Mr. Cummings tampered with the group's framework document that spells out the selection process of its presidential and vice presidential candidates. Vice President Boakai says he will recommit himself to resolving the quarrel upon his return to Liberia.
Either one is possible, the savage CPP or salvage the situation in there. We just took over and we are committed to do either of the two, and that's what we're there for.
That's right, because people say that former Vice President Boakai is a statesman, so they're kind of surprised to see what's happening. Have you reached out to Mr. Cummings in terms of how to put it together?
Well, you understand there's a collaboration, and I don't think there's a need for us to collaborate and have all of the kind of problems that we have, but we do have some problems. But, you know, when you collaborate, we had decided that we resolve our differences through some friendly negotiations and so, as all organizations do, I mean, they have problems, but to the extent that we have become the leader of the collaboration, and I didn't have much time immediately thereafter I'm here, my role is to go back to make sure that we get together and see how best we can begin to recommit ourselves.
Are you convinced, Mr. Vice President, that because there are some reports whether Mr. Cummings' team tamper with the framework of the collaborating political parties, are you convinced that this happened?
You know, the thing about saying Mr. Cummings tamper with a document, we said that there was a document that was signed and the whole process was under Cummings' supervision. And thereby, we believe that anything that may have happened during that time, Mr. Cummings should be honorable enough to say, yes, it happened during my time. Whether he did it directly or someone else did it, is the admission of the fact that it was under his supervision.
The CPP convention is coming soon, if I'm not mistaken, whether it's December. And there's a debate going on within the CPP in terms of how this election process should take place, in terms of who is supposed to be the standard bearer of the opposition. Some people are arguing whether it should be by secret ballot or should be by consensus. What's your view?
It's not a debate. It's something that was enshrined into the document. The selection process was to be by consensus as the first approach. The second, by VPS, if we do not have a consensus. Then the third will be that we'll do primaries. And so the process is laid down in the document, so there shouldn't be any argument. And we still look forward to following the procedures.
When we spoke the last time, I asked you what is going on. It seems to be a debate within the opposition in terms of which direction the opposition should be going. Should the opposition stay with a 77-year-old man or to stay with a younger Cummings? What do you say to people who say that you are old and you should not be the one to lead?
Well, they are entitled to their decisions. And I know that sometimes good wine comes with age. So people know that, yes, this 77-year-old man has a lot to offer Liberia than any other person so far. And I'm in good health, mentally correct. And so they have the decision to make. But I know that the public knows who they want.
I want to go back to the issue of leadership. We have President George Weah, and he's going to run for re-election. Do you think you can compete with Mr. George Weah under the banner of the collaborating political parties?
It's not only competing with Weah. We want to make Weah first one-time president, and this is decisive.
Well, Mr. Vice President, it's a pleasure to get to talk to you again.
Thank you so much. You've always been very kind, and I appreciate your coming here.
Joseph Boakai is the former Vice President of Liberia. You're speaking with us from the United States. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, November 8th. A spokesperson for the Eswatini government says the country has a constitution that spells out the methods to resolving issues affecting the country and does not need individual outsiders to tell it what to do. Last week, Julius Malema, leader of the Economic Freedom Fighters, the EFF of South Africa, called on King Mswati III of Eswatini to step down. Malema also said he and his supporters were going to occupy all borders of Eswatini if the king did not resign. Percy Simelane is the Director of Information and Communication for King Mswati III of the Kingdom of Eswatini. He says only the people of Eswatini can and should decide their destiny, not Julius Malema.
Julius Malema is not an authority for anything. He's South African. We have read about his strength, and our reaction is we have a constitution in this country, and we are following the constitution. Nowhere in the Constitution does it say people from outside can come and stop the flow of traffic in any border leading to Eswatini. Secondly, the way he is doing it, it is not a democratic way of achieving democracy. Democracy is about a people defining their destiny and not about neighboring parties calling from above for change. So Julius Malema is out of order. I don't know how Julius Malema expects to be a hero in Swaziland when, after more than 20 years since the Rainbow Nation of South Africa was born, he is not winning the presidential elections. This week, he failed to win the local government elections, and he expected to be a hero in a country where he does not belong.
But, Mr. Similale, don't you think Julius Malema, that he has following in Eswatini, and do you not feel that what he said is threatening to your government?
There is another party which calls itself Eswatini EFF. It's a minority group. Like I said before, democracy is about a people defining their destiny. If Malema in South Africa has a following in Eswatini, that does not mean he has the right to overthrow our constitution. Actually, there is no right to overthrow a constitution anywhere in the world, even in the United States of America.
You mentioned that you will resolve all issues through the constitutional means. You mentioned Sibaya.
Yes.
The people we talked to, particularly from the pro-democracy movement, said they don't have confidence in the Sibaya and even in the king.
My response to that would be there is no way this country can replace its constitution with mob opinion. They are calling from the street. They don't want to follow the constitution. We are saying no. It doesn't work like that. No one can run a country on people's opinion. A country runs on its constitution.
Thank you so much, sir. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
My pleasure, sir. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Percy Similane is Director of Information and Communication for King Mswati III of the Kingdom of Eswatini. He was speaking with us from the capital, Mbabane. Supporters of Africa's longest-serving leader, Cameroon's 88-year-old President Paul Biya, celebrated his 39 years in office over the weekend. Biya, who has been Cameroon's president since 1982, is seldom seen in public these days. As Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, President Biya's opponents are describing renewed calls for him to run again for president in 2025 as a joke.
Supporters of Cameroon's ruling party, the Cameroon People's Democratic Movement, CPDM, sing that their 88-year-old leader, President Paul Biya, can still rule the Central African state for another seven-year term, starting in 2025. Biya was declared the winner of the country's 2018 election with over 80% of the votes. The song was sung in towns and villages across Cameroon during celebrations of Biya's 39 years in office. One event was held in Monatele, capital of Lekie, a department near Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé. Henri Eyebe Aisi, Cameroon's state property, survey and land tenure minister, and Biya's close collaborator, led the CPDM party delegation to Lekie and delivered what he called a special message for Biya supporters. Aisi says the CPDM is appealing for a national consensus for Biya to seek a new term in 2025. He says the Lekie division is making an appeal to Biya to accept the call to run for president in 2025 and continue the good works he is doing for Cameroon. The call for Biya to run for president when his current seven-year term ends in 2025 was echoed in several towns and villages, sparking criticism from Biya's opponents. Christopher Ndong is secretary general of the Cameroon Renaissance Movement, a party that claims its candidate, Maurice Kamto, won the 2018 election and that Biya stole his victory. Ndong says an invitation for Biya to be a candidate in 2025 means the CPDM wants the octogenarian to die in office.
It's a slap in the face of Cameroonians and democracy in this country. Given his age, what will he do in power? Right now, he's not active. Honestly, this is provocation of the first order. Look at the chaos all over the place. The country is in debt. In fact, it shows you that there is nobody at the head.
Biya served as prime minister for 7 years before becoming president.
He is now the second longest serving leader in sub-Saharan Africa, after his neighbor Teodoro Obiang Nguema of Equatorial Guinea, who has held power since 1979. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the New York City Marathon, where Kenya completed a men's and women's double at the 50th New York City Marathon on Sunday, with Albert Correa and Peres Jepchirchir chalking up impressive victories at Central Park. Olympic champion Peres Jepchirchir won the New York City Marathon on Sunday in 2 hours, 22 minutes, 39 seconds, surviving a thrilling three-way battle before sprinting for the finish line. The Kenyan is the first athlete to pick up Olympic gold and win the famed five-borough race in the same year, with compatriot Viola Chepto and Ethiopian Abebel Yeshene finishing second and third respectively. In the men's category, Albert Correa, who took bronze in 2019, won the elite men's race in 2 hours, 8 minutes, 22 seconds, a 44 seconds gap on second place Moroccan Mohamed El Arabi, the first Moroccan to finish on the podium since 2009. In mixed martial art, Kamaruddin Usman, Nigerian-born professional mixed martial artist, defeated Colby Covington by unanimous decision to retain the UFC welterweight championship. The 34-year-old Kamaru Usman, popularly known as the Nigerian Nightmare, dropped the challenger twice in quick succession at the end of the second round with a big left hook, then a huge right hand. With Sunday's win, Kamaru Usman has won 19 fights in a row, including 5 title defenses.
You know, this guy's tough as nails. It's very, very tough. Like, let's be honest, you know, Ali needed a Frazier. You know, all these guys, you know, you can be the great ones, but there's always going to be that one guy that's going to be able to push you. And he is that guy, you know, as much of him outside of the octagon as, you know, most people don't like, myself included. You know, you have to respect him as a competitor.
In basketball news, the University of Rwanda's 3x3 basketball team will take part in the AfroVarsity 3x3 basketball championship, which will be hosted by the United States International University Africa in Nairobi, Kenya. The 4th edition of the Continental Universities Tournament will run from November the 6th to the 7th, and the tournament involves different universities in Africa. And on to football news. In women's football, Ghana's champions, Hasaka's ladies, are looking forward to booking the semifinal spot in the ongoing inaugural edition of the CAF Women's Champions League Egypt 2021, when they face Mali's AS Monday later today at the 30 June Stadium in Cairo. Also today, Egypt's Wadi Degla will face Equatorial Guinea's Guinea Malabo Kings in Group A match day 2 at the same 30 June Stadium. Nigeria's sole representative at the inaugural CAF Women's Champions League, Rivers Angels FC, got off their campaign with a disappointing 3-0 defeat. The Angels were thrashed by ASFAR of Morocco on Saturday. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday in November 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with all our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you will have a great week.